Alrighty, well, welcome everybody. Thanks for being here today. And in case I haven't had a chance to meet you, my name is Sarah. Cooper and I are married, and we are doing a session today on the hymns that we have been writing. I have to apologize here at the outset just briefly that the way in which this class is described is not entirely what we had in mind. They used last year's little blurb, and we didn't have a chance to update it because we got caught in that mudslide, and so we weren't able to get to the village on time to submit the new description of the class. So it's going to be kind of similar, but what we're going to do today, what we'd like to do is share a little bit about the hymns that we have been writing and have the opportunity to sing some of those together, and then maybe, depending on how things unfold, a chance to talk together about the role hymnody is playing in our congregations. And so that's kind of what we had wanted to do in this session. So to get us started, what I had planned to do is talk for just a little bit about our background and how we got started writing hymns, and to talk a little bit about what our intention is. And then we're going to have Cooper talk a little bit about the music itself, illustrate some of those concepts that we're trying to interject in the kind of music that we're writing. And then we have a packet, it looks like everyone picked one up, of just a sample of some of the hymns that we've been writing, and we thought that it would be an opportunity, if people wanted to sing some of those together just to see what they sound like, we could do that at the end of today's session. So anyway, to get us started, our background is one that in some ways is kind of, it's sort of curious that we came to this hymn writing, I'll call it project. I don't have any formal training in music nor in poetry. My area is in something called industrial organizational psychology. So I have kind of no professional background in anything that has to do with what we've been up to. But Cooper and I did meet in a church choir about over 20 years ago now. And in our marriage, we've done a lot of music together. And obviously, he's someone who's kind of like the professional guy who has had a number of jobs playing for different congregations and so forth. But about 6 or so years ago, I was changing jobs, and I was going to have a year's sabbatical, and we had decided that we wanted to do something together that would be meaningful and would be creative and would be kind of a fun new thing for us to do together as a couple. And so we actually did a couple of things to try to discern what that might actually look like. And we came to the decision that writing hymns together would actually be the thing. And it was one of those weird moments where he said over dinner, you know, we should try writing hymns. And I thought, that is it. That's it. Because we've always enjoyed singing through hymnals together and talking about them and so forth. And it just really struck a chord, pun intended. But anyway, so we decided that we would do that. And so I think at the beginning, it began as sort of a selfish enterprise, if you will, something that was kind of fun for us to see, hey, can we even do this? What would that even look like? And over the last 5 or 6 years, it actually has evolved into something that I think is much more meaningful for us, and I would say too for our congregation, where we are able to have the opportunity to sing some of those pieces together with our congregation. And in the process of that sort of evolution, moving from something that was just, if you will, kind of a fun sort of hobby or challenge for us, there's a number of things that we are doing differently now that I don't think we were attentive to at the beginning. One of them, for me, I'm the one that writes the words, and the way I decided to do that was to listen to the sermon every week, and then also to read all the lectionary readings that went along with that, and to really think about, you know, what is that? What is the message that might be useful as a hymn? And then to write a text in that next day or two that, in my mind, kind of went along with what I had heard. And then I would send them to Cooper, and he would, you know, go ahead and try to put some of those to music, the ones that he thought actually could kind of work. And at the beginning, I wasn't particularly attentive to certain things that, now that I kind of have had a little bit of experience with it, really do make a difference. I think one of the things is certainly, you know, the word choices and really, really thinking about the precision of words and what they mean to different people and how those are interpreted. I was thinking about that a bit with Glenn and Deborah's core concepts. I don't know if any of you have been to their sessions, but thinking about some of those words like identity or race or white, just that they take on so much variation in meaning and being very, very thoughtful and as intentional as possible with word choice. And so that's one thing. Certainly we've gotten a lot better with thinking about the meter. And I don't know how many of you have ever looked down at the bottom of the hymnal and you'll of a page and it'll say like 8787 or something like that. And really being very thoughtful about, okay, how do we want the meter of this particular piece to go? And thinking a lot about that in terms of how singable is it going to be for people. That if we're going to be throwing some very difficult words at them, perhaps it can be paired with common meter double, which is sort of a familiar one for all of us, that you're not throwing too many new things at people at the same time. And so that's been a change. I would say too, and this maybe comes from teaching, but trying to make sure that our hymns have a bit of an arc to them, that they, that as a singer, you enter into it with some ideas and some concepts that are familiar, but that through the course of singing, you actually are a bit challenged. And there's a pathway, there's a through line in the different verses and how they kind of unfold over the course of the song. And so, again, we're trying to be a lot more intentional about what is the point of singing this particular piece of music in the service. What do we want it to actually do for the singer in terms of how it is part of all the different components of a worship service? And so that's something else that has changed. The other thing I think that personally I've become increasingly more aware of is just the degree to which you're always writing for an audience. And that's truly when you write anything. Like if I write a journal article, I'm writing for other people who've got degrees like me. But, you know, like who is the audience, and just how very true it is that we're always writing for a particular people in a particular context, in a particular point in time. And so some of these hymns, I think, are very much reflective of the fact that we are kind of writing, in some sense, the 8:30 worshiping congregation at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Tacoma, Washington. There's always a bit of that's part of the deal. And I think the text especially reflects that. In our congregation, it tends to be pretty liberal. It's not socially conservative, and you have a pastor who is out in nature a lot, so you see a lot of themes of the environment that kind of work their way into our text because that's our congregation. That's the way in which a lot of times the scripture is interpreted, very much through that kind of perspective or that lens. I think our congregation, too, struggles with certain things that maybe other congregations wouldn't necessarily struggle with, like maybe extreme self-sufficiency is something that a lot of people talk about, you know, like that trying to be emotionally vulnerable is something that they are aware of. And having our text maybe speak to some of that vulnerability then makes it more acceptable to kind of be more authentic, perhaps, in church, is something that they have actually wanted. Our congregation, too, when I think about some of the things that come up in adult forums and different discussions, is the role of doubt and the role of certainty in faith and how they believe, how they interpret scripture. And so those particular themes come out in the kinds of texts that we write. So I think that's one of the important pieces to keep in mind that, you know, hymns, when I look back at old hymnals and I see, like, I was raised United Methodist, there's a whole, you know, section of old hymnals that related to, like, the temperance movement. And that was extremely relevant for those particular people in that particular context in that particular time period. And we're not singing those songs anymore. They don't actually serve us in worship very frequently, if at all, in fact. And so I like to think of what we're trying to do as being useful now. And to what extent they can be useful for other people or useful later, who can say? But they have been useful, I think, in our congregation in different ways. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to share that with you here today. It's been a very meaningful project for Cooper and me. And in some ways, if nothing else were to ever happen with it, the fact that I try to struggle with how to put what I just heard on Sunday morning and the readings into some kind of poem has been very good, a very good exercise for me to really think about what does this mean to me and how can this maybe be instructive in the way I grow in my own faith. So I think that's enough for me for now. I'm going to turn over to Cooper, who's going to talk a little bit about the music itself.
Yeah, my name's Cooper, and if you're new today, then I've been here this week as a kind of worship musician, helping to put music together for Vespers and a few other things. And my background is one of basically going to a liberal arts Lutheran college. I went to Pacific Lutheran University and got a choral music ed degree and studied pipe organ and all the things that people who like church music do. And then Sarah talked about kind of how we got together and where all this has come from. So what's been very fun for me in this process is the idea that, you know, if you sort of limitation being the mother of invention, in that if you just say, I'm going to write music, go, that's hard. But if you say, okay, can you write music for this text, go, then you really have that limitation to use as your focal point, and it becomes a really enjoyable, very specific creative opportunity. And so that's what has been so nice, having a partner in this endeavor. And I've noticed that a lot of the situations, it's not too common in a hymnal where you look and you see words and music by the same person. And sometimes you do. Marty Haugen has a lot of hymns that he's written the words, he's written the music. But he often will, he has a sort of a partner in Susan Briel. So Susan Briel would write some wonderful text. Marty Haugen would take that and create a hymn based on that. And so it's been fun for me to have that with Sarah. And one of the other things I tried to do, especially at the outset, was to get, I guess, my bearings in this concept was a quote that I like is that good artists copy, but great artists steal. And so I tried to start by taking from some of the songwriters and hymn writers that I have thought were very successful, very singable, and seeing what would it be like to try and create a hymn that sounds like it was written by this person. And the one that we sang in worship, I believe, on Tuesday is a good example of that. With in your packet, I think the first song, number one on page one, that Creator God Who Breathes This Life, that was very much influenced by the style of Natalie Sleeth. If you're familiar with Natalie Sleeth, she has one of her most famous hymns that's made it into certain hymnals is the... Hymn of Promise is, if you listen now with Creator God, it has a similar feel to it, and I was going for that emotional type of connection and simplistic style of melody with, I guess, a sense of maybe wistfulness to the way that the harmonies unfold. So let's just sing again, maybe the first verse of this together, and it's in your packet, page one.
God who breathes us life, who grants
some of the things I admire about hymn writers like Marty Haugen is I feel like some worship accompanists, when you have a accompanist for your worship services, they can be very creative and they can come up with nice ways to bring the congregation in on the next verse. What Marty Haugen did that's so brilliant is he gives you help. He will often write two or more measures of transition. And so some of the hymns that I've tried to create give you those two measures of transition. So after we've just finished this, you get a little bit of something to wait for, and now you sing it. Yes. So it just, those types of things have started to enter more modern hymnals, which I think are useful. The other thing I do is I try and go some places harmonically that are not as well represented in hymns. So drawing on influences from maybe some more jazz chords where you get, you know, those types of chords are not your standard just four-part classic Germanic hymn writing. I think they connect in the modern world and tend to take you to an emotional response that can fit the text in a nice way. What was the next one we thought we would look at?
I think the very next page, Hold the Christ Light. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this one is an example of something that I've found in some of the Lutheran sources, but more in the Catholic source called Gather. Gather is a hymnal that stole all the talent. when they put together the Gather hymnal, second edition, all of a sudden you had Michael Jonkis, David Haas, Bernadette Farrell, Marty Haugen, all these amazing people who were emerging as leading progressive hymn writers of that era, who were drawn to GIA rather than Augsburg Fortress. And so this stuff emerged from the GIA hymnal that was so rich. They did a musical setting or two for every psalm and put it in the hymnal by these people. There was tons of new hymns that came out of that. Some of them eventually made it into ELW, like you know, that stuff, You Are Mine by David Haas, or those hymns which have that sound, which really came out of the Gather. So here I tried to create something that was more in that vein. And the other thing that Gather did a lot of is give you a refrain that was very easy to sing and meant for congregation of any kind. And maybe a cantor would handle the verses, and then congregation would always come back in on the refrain, maybe the cantor on the verses. So I thought this would be a good one to demonstrate that, and so the way the refrain goes is,
sing verse 1.
verse 3 together.
When love invites and calls by name, when foes meet human eyes, when grace transcends a narrow sight, when ways of justice rise, with Christ light for me, oh, the light for you, recalling signs of Christ we share.
Congregation-friendly, we hope. And a lot of these hymns use much more corporate language, a lot of we's, a lot of us, a lot of together, not so much I and me. Some might, but we feel that the corporate language speaks to a lot of modern needs, and so that's something that Sarah's done a really wonderful job with, is trying to connect with a sense of the together. Now, she talked about doubt, and so that we actually, this is, we did a little self-publishing, and so this is our songbook, hymnal, if you will, that we wrote and published ourselves using just a modern printing resource in Tacoma. And it is, they are selling it in the bookstore if you're interested. But in the back, it has sort of the thing where you have a topical index. So say, you know, baptism, a few hymns on baptism, community, different hymns on community. And one of them is, we have a section on doubt that we felt four of the hymns in here kind of help speak to concepts of doubt for a sense, you know, just this idea of kind of postmodern worship. We who have gone through the age of science, the space era, and it's difficult to not try and reconcile the teachings of science and the teachings of our, especially in the past, the way of biblical understanding. And so to wrestle with that in a way that feels together and inclusive of anybody on that spectrum of doubt, from people who, you know, really just are very comfortable going with a full-on understanding of Bible as word without needing too much fuss or interpretation, just go with it, versus people who don't relate to the Bible at all and say, well, I like community, I like spirituality, I'm going to go to church, but I guess I kind of call myself an agnostic. You know, anyone from on that spectrum, we hope some of these hymns would be a good fit for them. And the one that I wanted to sort of demonstrate is one called We Question, We Ponder, which I think is on your page number 3. Mm-hmm. And for this one, I guess I would say a congregation could sing this eventually. It is not a standard melody. It is not standard harmony. And with this one, I tried to do some new things. It was much influenced by jazz chords. A sense of the lonely and a sense of struggle, but also a sense of, you know, tender and maybe reassuring eventual feelings when you get to the end, that, you know, you still got a question, but you feel supported by your community or by words of encouragement. So I'll just, I think, just demonstrate this, and maybe if we could all try and sing the fourth verse together once we've heard it a few times.
Sing through them, see what they're like, or discuss any of the words or anything along those lines. We can have this second half be somewhat open to your interests and what you would like to do.
What would you say is the most unique of this here?
Well, the last one was pretty unique in that way.
Yeah. And I'll just say that last one is based on John 3, like 1 through 15. So all that stuff. And I should, one of the things we've written in the back of this, a little blurb for each of these to give the scriptural reference and so forth. I bet it's that whole of questioning, Nicodemus questioning Jesus going in. Well, what is this? And so that's my spin on that. And actually, that's where Jan Rue. Jan Rue's our pastor at St. Mark's, and kind of where he took it, too. So
I would say the most unique, it might be this, "Oh, how often have we turned to God."
Oh, how often have we turned to God,
"Oh, how often have we turned to God" on page 5. Well, it came from a really interesting sermon, the one about the sort of rubbing the lamp for the genie.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that at all, or...?
Well, I don't remember some of the details, but it was Barbara Brown Taylor's book, that I'm blanking on the title right now, was part of the sermon that day, so I remember Jan weaving that in. And but this idea about the role of prayer and how people understand prayer and praying for specific outcomes,
And why do we pray? Are we actually hoping, you know, kind of the God as granting our wishes kind of understanding might leave us a smidge empty-handed sometimes. And but what does prayer actually do for us? And so that, I think, the text of this one is kind of edgy, I would say. Some people would be perhaps be a bit offended by it. And then I think Cooper's treatment of that is also unusual. So this would be, I think, hard for a congregation to sing. It would probably be better handled by like a quartet, maybe as a musical offering, possibly. But I'll also say that it's common meter double, so you could put this thing to King's Fold or something like that, to a tune that had that meter, so it would be, you could swap it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this could be very successfully sung to a very accessible congregational tune. Mm-hmm. When I got this, I actually thought, well, let's have a little bit of fun with this. And so I tried to create a neo-madrigal. So it's four-part writing in kind of an ancient sense of where the harmonies would go, mm-hmm. and with a very strange idea of constantly rotating meter.
Yeah.
And so it's not particularly easy to sing, but Sarah and I have a kind of a way we do it that we can demonstrate that shows off a little bit of the harmonies and things like that. And then if you want, we could all try and sing verse 3 if you want to try some of the harmonies. If you're kind of a choral person or not, but we can just give it a shot and see what happens.
How bad can it go?
Yeah, what is it? So Sarah and I, we'll do verse 1 and 2, which we normally do.
Do you
want to
use the microphone?
Sure.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Sorry about that. Thanks for reminding me.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Good to go.
Let's see. Where are we? There are numerous errors in this, our first edition.
That was one of them. Yeah.
But it's, yeah. It's edition number 2 coming out next summer.
Hey, Ruth Duck writes some breathtaking words, and then she puts them to, like, everyday hymns.
Yeah.
So these people are singing this, da 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 da, and then they go, what the heck did I just sing? Because it's so stunning.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right. And that's a good idea, I think. Like, if the words speak to you, but the tune doesn't, do your thing. I mean, it's good to do that and make it accessible.
Are there others that you would like to take a look at? Other questions?
This is a random question.
Sure.
So you mentioned industrial psychology is your background. How, in your poetic composing, did you weave any of that as your background from that world into the, is there anything really like that that you experienced?
Well, you know, I think there's something, I'll say no, but I think there's a certain approach that I take that is very, I'm also like, I analyze a lot of data, I teach statistics, that kind of thing. So when I start to do this, I am pretty structured in how I think about how to put this together. So there's, I think there's a certain similarity in the methodology perhaps that I use. But no, I think the one thing, you know, I study workplace of like change and its impact on employee health and well-being. And so, you know, I've had collected a lot of survey data, I've interviewed lots of people, I've done that kind of thing. And so I do think that the sort of similarity is how powerful it is to have your experience named. And I think that's a common thread. I've seen that with the research I've done, you know, in interviewing, like, say, you know, displaced Boeing workers, you know, that they hang on to certain things that have happened on their in their workplaces. And the power of naming that precisely for people is really quite healing. And while I don't know much about clinical psychology, I'm not a clinician at all, I do think that there's something that I've tried to do here that maybe naming things that aren't named in other places, that maybe that's a common denominator here.
I was wondering about industrial psychology even to corporate psychology, because in the commentary around using we's more than me's and I's, there's something in that too.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Yeah, sure.
How many hymns does the word adaptive then show up in, huh?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
How many of your hymn texts does the word adaptive show up in?
Exactly. Yeah, that's one thing. Every now and then I'll throw a word in just something I've written and I'll, you know, send it to Cooper. We do, in fact, live together, but I will email him this stuff, which is kind of silly, I suppose. And there'd be a word there, like a paradigm or something. I remember we had a long discussion about that. Where it's just a little bit too obtuse or something. It's just not going to work out.
But we kept paradigm. We keep
paradigm. But we don't actually use that hymn very often.
No.
Yeah. Not very often. But one of the things, like, while I do write the text and I draft it and he then drafts the music, we then will kind of just work it together and pick over word choices, commas. He might write there may be a measure in there that I think, I don't like that measure, then that tune is not particularly pretty right through there. We'll just kind of hammer that out.
Did your pastor ever say, please don't write in about this sermon?
No, they haven't.
But you know what they did comment on is, they really noticed that all of a sudden, for like an entire year, Sarah was sitting with a notepad just writing and looking at every service.
And sometimes I would go twice. You know, I go to 8:30 and sometimes I sing at 11 too. So I would check my notes from 8:30 at 11, and I suppose it made Rebecca and Jan feel a little bit funny. But no, there's actually one in here, I think, did we put in Bold and Steady Promise?
Mm-hmm.
Where Rebecca, we have two pastors, two full-time pastors, and she's the associate. She asked if we could write something for a series of sermons that she was going to be doing through Lent, and wanted to weave a number of texts together. Did I think I could probably do that? I said, you know, again, that's a fun challenge. I really like doing that. So there's been a little bit of that. She said, I feel a little funny asking you, like, if you would write a hymn to kind of, you know, for these next couple weeks. But we did do that. And do we put it in here?
Yeah,
we can roll the state clause.
Yeah, we can do that.
So that's number 12. And this one, our church has a theme each year. Like, who is my neighbor was a theme for a year. And for the well-being of all is another theme. And this one was weaving together some Old Testament texts and this idea of covenant being the very basis for our well-being. That everything that we have, every gift that we're given, every ability that we have to have a sense of well-being really comes fundamentally from that covenant, which is evidenced in lots of different stories. And so that is woven throughout these four verses.
Sure. Disgusted with myself, because when we order these copies, we always put a little sticker on the back that has a link to our website, and I forgot to put them on. So all the ones in the bookstore don't have that sticker. We have created a website that has resources and a clickable link with us singing through every one of our hymns.
It's so stunningly helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So that's on our website, and our website is just evergreenhymns.com. So evergreenhymns.com. Evergreenhymns, all one word.
It's on the paper.
Mm-hmm. Is it on the paper?
It's right here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can see that at the bottom of these hymns. So that's where you guys get it, but sadly, that stuff doesn't have it on it.
Copyright to use your hymns?
So basically, the way we feel about it is, you know, this is the thing that, you know, probably needs to be purchased because the other things wouldn't have the accompaniment. However, on our website, Each hymn can be individually purchased if you just want one hymn, and then it sends you just like image files that have basically what's in here for just that one hymn. What's in here that might not be in there is I have, in the back, we have things like oboe and violin and flute parts that kind of augment, kind of like what you've been hearing in worship this week. I try and make that sort of thing possible for some of the hymns.
There's also bulletin-friendly inserts that one could use with just the melody line, and just feel free to, like, you know, make as many copies as you need. That's fine. We just want people to use it if it's really helpful to them.
Maybe. Those you can get on the website without buying anything. So a bulletin-friendly copy is just downloadable.
Is it one-time use only, or?
Oh no, just use it as you want. Yeah.
Because some publishers do that.
Yeah, we're not cool enough to worry about that.
No. If it can be helpful, please do use it. Yeah.
If, you know, Augsburg picks us up one day, they might tell you otherwise.
But. How many hymns have you written altogether besides these?
That's a good question. I would say maybe 30.
30 or 35.
But some of them are bad. Some of them are really, really lame. So, in the hymnal, I think we have like 20 or something.
Yeah, I don't feel like we put anything bad in there. They didn't make the cut. sometimes it just doesn't stand the test of time. Like, I'll like it when we first put it together, and then when Coop and I sit down to play through things, we always skip that one or something. And it's like, after about 6 months, I don't want to sing that anymore. So.
Yeah, some didn't make the cut. Even though they had really interesting content sometimes based on the text that Sarah sent me, it just didn't pan out.
Yeah. Anything else?
Could we try When We Live in God's Peace?
I'm sorry, what you said?
Could we try When We Live in God's Peace?
You can, yeah.
Yeah, this is one that I think, again, a congregation could get eventually, and I think it's actually a really nice one to maybe hope that a congregation would feel like singing. I have tested this out at theological conferences, and it worked great because pastors, you know, you get 30 pastors in a room and they're going to sing a hymn. But it is a little bit unusual. What I did is, this is a nice, I really liked what Sarah did with this text, where it's kind of like, if this happens, then this. If this happens, then this. If this happens, then this. So I tried to have one type of modality for this, and then for like question and answer, I tried to have a different modality for the question and the answer. So what it does is, this is a really unusual situation where you're constantly changing whether something is sharp or flat based on if it's the question or the answer. So what you'll hear in the melody is, that type of shift where you can kind of tell I'm either in the question or I'm in the answer. So
I'll just also say with this one, this is kind of a funky one, but I wrote this as a call to worship and had just written the first verse. And I, in my mind, when I write stuff, I don't typically have like a tune in mind, unless I'm trying to stay with a particular meter, then maybe I'll use that as a sort of a cheater to ensure that I've got the right stresses on the right syllables, so that you're not saying something strange, you know, like it's more than just having the same number of syllables per line, it's having the stresses similar in each of the verses. And so I had sort of intended for this to be a short little call to worship. And then when Cooper wrote this, he said, I think it needs to be a full thing. So I just went ahead and brainstormed essentially more blessings for verses 2 and 3. But this was a whole sermon on how do we, kind of what does a modern day blessing look like? And blessing being beyond just kind of, again, getting what you sort of want, but maybe having a shifted perspective, an ability to do something that you weren't able to do previously and so forth. So this one had a funky evolution in terms of, like, I wrote one verse, he put something musical together, and then I came back and wrote two more verses the next day, I think.
So why don't I demonstrate verse one, and then indulge me, and let's see how we do on singing this very twisty melody.
When we live in God's peace in our sorely troubled world, when we sense hopeful light in the darkness, when we warm to new life, though we face the chill of death, when we see holy strength in our weakness, when we hear well-known words with a newness that awakes, when we hold on to hope, though despairing, when we share what we have with an ease that's not our own,
happy or hopeful, that you can find hope in the darkness of the minor also.
I like that. Yeah. I think the general sense I was going for was the concept of awareness of a change. Like, you know, this feels like something and now we maybe realize that it's blessing. This feels like something and now we realize that it's blessing. You know, so just that idea of, you know, our shifting experience was what I was going to try and evoke with the constantly changing mode.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of aware of the time here, so I'm thinking, why don't we end with by singing We Lift Our Melodies of Hope, which is just on page 8. And I think this is perhaps appropriate since it's a song about song. this was based on the Magnificat. Actually, in our congregation one year, the week that that text was part of the lectionary reading, we had a congregation member commit suicide. You know, it was just horrifying. Someone who was really quite well known. And so that sermon that week was tough. And it was extremely powerful. But talking about whatever your song is, you gotta sing it. You gotta sing your song, whether it's joyful or, to your point, if it's just a song of lament or a song of praise, or using song as a way to kind of get you through. And so all of those themes are part of these three verses, where you'll see that I've tried to talk about how we use song in our walk.
And this was, musically, I felt, you know, we were all so upset that I was almost going for a sort of a defiant joy in this. It's like, this is going to be, we're going to lift this up, it's going to be powerful, and in that way it can kind of speak to where we were all feeling, so.
Thanks very much for coming.